Obituary.
Sergio Mendes. The man who bathed the world in Brazilian samba sunshine died on September 5th, aged 83.
Over many years, he had grown accustomed to the things they'd like to say. That his music was lounge, lift, airport, cruise liner, burbling across the aisles as shoppers debated what to buy. That it had no focus, structure or meaning, and was easy listening in a nutshell. Sergio Mendes simply didn't care. He took easy as a compliment, meaning the melodies were strong and would merely flash his sunny, slightly buck-toothed smile and hunch at his piano to give them more. For himself, he put no label on his music. It was just what came naturally to him. Bossa Nova was the style they called him king of, but to him, Bossa Nova, like bebop, was an era, not a style. This branch from the samba tree had its time and place, and for him its chief place was Bottles Alley in Copacabana, the rough end of Rio, and especially the Bottles Bar, where great musicians would go and hang around together. There he sat as a teenager, at the feet of Antonio Carlos Jobim and João Gilberto, true kings of bossa nova, to learn the rhythms and arrangements that took him away from classical piano for good. Henceforth, he blended his piano playing with bass, guitar, percussion, drums and, from 1965, two female singers. Small forces, but the effect they had on popular music was huge. By his slowing down days, he had amassed more than 40 albums, many of them gold or platinum, 3 Grammys and an Oscar nomination, all for taking his blend of jazz, rock and samba up to the United States, even twice to the White House, and almost everywhere from there. To him, it was all serendipity, an English word he loved. All bits of luck and magical encounters. Serendipity brought him, at 13, to a friend's house, where he heard Dave Brubeck's Take Five and fell in love with jazz. The freedom of it, the improvisation, the harmonies that moved beneath. It also brought Herbie Mann and Charlie Bird, jazz superstars, to the Bottles Bar in 1961, with a return invitation that took him to New York. There, serendipity helped him meet Cannonball Adderley, the jazz trombonist, who wanted to record with him. By chance again, in 1965, when his band was breaking up and the members were returning to Brazil, he heard a girl singing, softly, wonderfully, just the sound that would make his arrangements stand out. He went straight to her parents' house to persuade them to part with her, and Lanny Hall became his lead singer. That fresh, sinuous music then fell on the ears of Jerry Morris and Herb Alpert, maestro of the Tijuana Brass. He signed with them, and in 1966 he and his band, Brazil 66, produced in Jorge Ben's Mais Canada, the first world hit in Portuguese. Magic serendipity, however, could not account for every twist. He was endlessly curious, his ears ever open to catch at anything new. They were fine-tuned already to the rhythms of maracatu, frevo, hepenji, sertanejo. Even the taxis of Rio hooted to a beat. Where jazz seemed to him to move directly forward, Brazilian rhythms kept shifting. He was tuned too to the sound of the berimbau or bow stick and the high-pitched cuica drum, as well as to the standard instruments he had met as a boy at the Niterói Conservatoire. The moment he found himself saying, "Wow, that's different," he would confidently take the plunge. Many of his numbers were covers of songs that he Brazilianized by changing the beat, adding lilt and sparkle. The Beatles' Day Tripper, Simon and Garfunkel's Scarborough Fair, Dionne Warwick's Never Gonna Let You Go. He leapt to arrange Paul McCartney's The Fool on the Hill, not only because he loved the melody, but because it was in three time, when samba was in four or two, and that intrigued him. He rushed to hire Lanny because instead of a saxophone or trombone blowing away behind him, he could have her high voice soothing and swaying, both different and perfect. His curiosity did not fade with age. In 2006, his album Timeless was produced by the rapper Will.i.am and featured two numbers with Black Eyed Peas. For 40 years by then, he had ridden the ups and downs of the bossa nova craze, touring widely, always exploring. Not only jazz, but also rap and hip-hop were obvious partners for samba, since they shared an ancestry in Africa. Wherever Africans, mostly enslaved, had gone in the Americas, they had taken their rhythms with them. If the latest iteration was rap, he would gladly play with that too. His jazz and Latin rhythms were so novel that listeners often focused on those. But no, it was the melody that made a great song. That was what rooted and stayed in the average person's mind. Rhythm came later, and lyrics last of all. Most people had no idea what Maish Kanada meant, but it didn't matter. The Japanese still invited him there 30 times. That soaring opening simply made people happy. So did Bom Tempo, a Grammy-winning album of 2010 whose title anyone could translate. Good times, good weather, good drumming. When he thought of Brazil, he thought free celebration, like a little boy dancing with a drum in the street. Other images pressed in too. A song called The Frog was set firmly in the rainforest, complete with croaking in both frog and Portuguese. Fronds and creepers snaked across the album covers, and steamy black couples embraced in the jungle, where he himself wore black tie. If not there, his background could be the immense white beach of Copacabana, with the ocean rolling in. Critics accused him of forgetting his Brazilian roots since the violent coup in 1964 that had driven him to leave. But although he lived in Los Angeles for 60 years, he remained proudly Brazilian, half black, half Portuguese, and nothing else. His Grammy in 1993 was for Brasileiro, a tribute to his country's music. His Oscar nod was for a song in a film that celebrated Rio. On stage, his fedora gave a clue to him, as well as his delighted smile. His mission, after all, was to Brazilianize the popular music of the world, something that was very like inviting the whole world to a party.